Welcome to an encore performance of Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? From Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, with Jim Packard announcing. In this hour of What Do You Know, Eilert Waldman, author of Red Hook Road, the lovely Lois Schiff in our Town of the Week, Holly Springs, Mississippi, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Now, the man who says Bristol's going to need a dance partner, Michael Feldman.
Oh, yeah, hey. So I could polish up my act, but I think you would be the guy to do
it. No, I think you're the guy to do it.
No, I've seen you dance, and you're very light on your feet.
Yeah, I am.
I think we've danced on a number of important occasions.
Very important occasions, yes.
Yeah. I yell it. It's a Hebrew word, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Waldman is with us. She's in Berkeley. Of course, she is, I guess, famous, you could say, or infamous, I don't know, for Bad Mother. But she's not a bad mother. We know that. And she's also a great author. The new one is The Red Hook, just out now. I should have more material here, really, to back up what I'm saying, but we'll ask her what it's all about. She's on the line with us from Berkeley. And let's say hello, shall we? Are you there?
I am here, in fact.
I yell it. Is that how you pronounce it?
It's perfect.
Yeah, because if you would have taken his name, then you would have had two unpronounceable names. And that would be intolerable.
True.
Yes. And that's gazelle, right, in Hebrew, as I recall.
Oh, my goodness. How do you know this?
I looked it up.
There you go.
I can't lie to you. I can't lie to you. Did your mom
power
do...
Power of Google.
Did your mom do a lot of Hebrew naming?
You want to know actually why I was named Ayelet? My mother's name
yes.
is Roxanne.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in Brooklyn, she was tormented. So she decided she was going to give me the most common name she could think of. And when she was pregnant with me, she moved to Israel, and they stayed there for about 2 years.
Oh.
Had I been born in America, you'd be talking to Penny right now.
Yeah. Penny Waldman's on the
Penny
line.
Penny Waldman. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah. So it was the most common name in Israel at that time?
It was, yeah.
I yell it?
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. It's a pretty name, though.
Thank you.
But you've done some interesting naming with your children, though, too.
Yeah, it's like a Jewish home for the aged in our house.
Yeah, you got an Abe there.
We got an Ida. We have a Sophie. We have a Zeke.
They sit around. They don't smoke anymore.
They play Mahjong.
The tiles.
They're borscht.
Yeah, that's a very nice situation you got going there.
Yeah, definitely.
You must be pretty tired of this whole bad mother thing by now, aren't you? I mean, you've been castigated, and it's not really even true, and...
Well, I dug my own grave, didn't I?
Yeah.
That is what I called the book.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm... It depends on who you ask. Ask the teenagers in my house, they'll tell you that I'm a terrible mother. Ask the 7-year-old, and he probably likes me more than the rest.
Yeah. But the simple truth is, it's just because you like your husband more than your children. And it's rare, but it occurs, you know. Right? I mean, you're more husband-oriented than child, perhaps.
Perhaps, yes.
Yeah. Not anymore, apparently.
Well, you know, I think what happens is that I was responding to what I saw as a hierarchy that exists in the culture where everyone around me was putting their children on this pedestal above their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if we're putting anything on a pedestal, people, we should be putting our marriages on a pedestal.
Right.
And if a good mother is a mother who loves her children more than anyone else in the world, well, then I'm a bad mother because I love my husband more than my children.
Yeah. Could you talk to my wife? Is that possible?
You know, men ask me that all the time.
I know. I'm sure, yeah. Because it is rather rare. Now, of course, it is Michael Chabon, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, and that's, so, you know, maybe that's easier to love.
You know what it is?
Right.
It's not about Michael Chabon being a Pulitzer Prize-winning author.
Yeah.
He does all the cooking.
Yeah.
He does most of the straightening up. It's really easy to love a man pushing a Swiffer around the floor.
Yeah. Hey, I do all that, and what credit do I get?
Do you really?
Yeah.
Do you really?
If I do a bad job,
I
hear...
laundry.
I do laundry all the time.
Do you sort?
No, I don't...
dark?
I don't sort.
There you go.
You got to draw the line somewhere.
Sorting, and your life will change.
Michael Chabon, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, sorts?
Yes, he does.
What a guy. All right. Well, I guess he wins then in that situation. But then you were a journalist, correct?
Sort of.
Yes, started in journalism anyway. And then the public defender, how did that get in there?
Well, I actually started as a public defender.
Oh, you did?
I went to law school.
Yeah.
And then I was a public defender. And then it was after that I left the public defender's office, I became a stay-at-home mother for about 15 minutes. And that's when I started writing.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And was Michael an influence on you stylistically? Or not?
Not necessarily stylistically, yeah. But he was certainly an influence on my choice of career. When I was staying home with my kids, I thought, I have to find something to do that I can do for 4 hours a day and spend the rest of the day lying around, you know, going to Gymboree and Mommy and Me. And I looked at him, and that's what he did. So I thought, how hard could that be?
Yeah.
Try that.
Yeah, and it's really come out well. I'm reading the Red Hook one right now.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Great,
which is about the difficulties or impossibilities of living with Jewish in-laws, basically, right?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never heard it described that way, but that's going to be my new tagline for it, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And that's very good. But what I don't understand is now you guys were voted, the third most annoying literary couple?
I know, and who gets to be one and two? I put so much effort into that.
Who's two?
I don't understand what Siri Hustavedt and Paul Auster do that's more annoying than us. I mean, really. I hate to lose.
Jonathan Franzen and himself are number two, I understand. What about Franzen being on the cover of Time magazine? That must have been pleasing.
I think it's great. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
I just hope it sells a lot because, you know, they're not going to put any more writers on the cover unless that flies off the shelves. So tell your audience to go buy many copies of Time magazine and the book.
Yeah, Freedom is the one. It's annoying to me because, like Obama, you know, on his vacation, went into a bookstore and bought it. And you can't get it if you're a regular person because it's not out yet.
Yeah,
I think it's out
that,
maybe
that they
today.
Snuck him a copy.
Yeah. Not fair.
Not fair.
Yeah.
I read it months ago.
Oh, you did, yeah.
Even before the president.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually got an early copy. It's a fabulous book.
Excellent. Really good. Does Michael turn his work over to you for review and comments, and do you do the same with him?
Nothing leaves this house that hasn't been edited by the other person, and not even email usually.
Yeah. What about your blog? Does he edit that?
That's the one thing he didn't edit, and that's why I got into so much trouble.
Yeah. Is that that came out on the blog, that whole thing about you love your husband?
No, I think that was an essay that I wrote for an anthology. I blogged for all of, I think, 6 weeks altogether.
Oh.
Way back when, about 5 years ago. But in that 6 weeks, I managed to say plenty of things that got me in a whole load of grief. But the essay that I wrote that I said I love my husband more than my kids was for a literary anthology, which is why I said it, because how many people read literary anthologies? Nobody.
No.
No one was going to read it.
No, the people who write them read them, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe even. They read their own essays.
Yeah.
And then it got picked up by the New York Times. And, you know, when I was so excited to be in the New York Times, I didn't bother to put sort of think through the difference between being in a literary anthology that 5 people would read and a paper that 5 million people read every day.
Yeah. And that was the New York Times thing. It was about the husband-children thing.
Yes, right.
But the blogging is where you said you were hoping that your son would be gay.
Oh, that wasn't in the New York Times.
No.
That was on, I believe, Salon.com.
Oh, yeah, Salon, that's right.
Yeah, nobody reads that. Who reads that?
That was back in the Mothers That...
Mothers Who Think, the days of Mothers Who Think.
Yeah. And why was that? I mean, that seems like, you know, legitimate.
Why do people get mad at that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who doesn't... What mother in her right mind doesn't want a gay son who will, you know, help her choose the color of her drapes and will take her on wonderful trips with him and his delightful boyfriend.
Yes.
Alas, my fondest wishes have not come true, though. He is heterosexual like his dad. It's disappointed me in so many ways.
Well, you can't let him know that, though. You know, because then he'll carry that around.
No, I've told him that I'm not. You know, we've managed to forgive him. It took us a while. He had to come out as straight.
Yeah.
But he did, and, you know, we cried, but we worked through it as a family.
Your kids are very quotable, you know. They say the greatest thing. I mean, you know, you really should just, you know, write down everything they say and publish that.
I'm banned now. They have informed me. that the older ones, at least, that I'm not allowed to even mention their names in print anymore.
Really? That happened with my daughters and me, too, when they reached adolescence.
Yeah.
Or pre-adolescence, actually.
And you're not allowed to say anything on the air ever again.
No. And where I work here, you know, a kid would come in from her, you know, from Ellie's class and say that he knew the guy that she was going out with, and I didn't know she was going out with it, you know, and so I naturally inquired. You know, they're
yeah.
going to, what going together, for example, what that means, that the concept means at that age, you know, at 11 or whatever.
Well, I think nowadays it means pretty much exclusively internet, Facebook. The only way that you know that your kid has a boyfriend is if their Facebook status changes to in a relationship.
Yeah, are you single? Yeah, I'm single. I'm single again. That's what I got from her, too. I saw her on her site. It said, I'm single again. I thought, were you married? I had no... It's a shocking concept, really. I'm so out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. Maybe you can relate more to your children than I can. But at an early age, Nora, my youngest, was having friend problems. Friends were letting her down. I said, you know, Nora, in my experience, you know, you take friends for what they can give you, and you don't expect things that you're not going to get from them. You know, you sort of know the limitations of where the friendship is. You know, and then it's not so bad. You're not disappointed. She said,
"Wow, that is so not female."
Yeah. Well, and she said, "Dad, you're not a girl, and you're not now."
Yeah.
So I never offered experience, you know, I mean, are you, your kids accept you as an advisor in some of these, all these things they go through?
No, I'm very careful. They come and they, you know, break down and they cry, the girls especially, if there's something going on.
Yeah.
And I feel like my job is just to get indignant on their behalf. I can't necessarily give them advice, but I can tell them that they've been wronged and that, and, you know, and that I feel their pain. That's all they really want, is to know that, you know that they're suffering. And
that,
you know, you feel it too. That's all anybody wants, right? That's all your wife wants when she's upset. She doesn't want you to solve her problems.
No.
She just wants you to tell her that it's legitimate for her to be upset.
Okay. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, write that down. I'll see all these ways that I'm going to guarantee you a more satisfying, intimate life.
Legitimate.
Yes.
I got to say it a little better than that, though. Okay, that's legitimate.
No. No, what you say is, that horrible wretch, she ruined your life.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. But that would be her, unfortunately. And then that gets back in the whole conundrum.
It. That one line, and I can't help you anymore.
No, sorry. No, thank you.
You're over.
Yeah. I thought leaving the condoms with the bag open around the house there was a nice touch, though. I mean, not every...
Listen, it's a dangerous game out there. There's all sorts of horrible diseases. And the condoms arrived at our house. I didn't order them. And there they were, a bag of candy-colored condoms. What's a person going to do with that? So I thought, I know what I'll do. And I put them in the kids' bathroom and didn't really think much else about them. And then one day there was a shriek, like someone had cut off their foot with an axe, and I went running into the bathroom, and my son and my daughter were staring at this, and they said, "Is that what we think that is?" And I said, "Well, it depends. If you think it's condoms, yes." And they were so horrified. They told me I was the most disgusting, horrible, gross person they'd ever met, and I said, "That's fine, but the bag is open, so nobody will even know if you take them out." They did take them out eventually, but that was to play water balloons.
Water balloons, right. That's exactly what I would expect under those conditions.
My plans failed. But they're still, you know, they're there. I assume they have some sort of expiration date. I guess I should find that out. Does anyone know? Do you know about the expiration date?
I've had mine since junior high school in my wallet. I'm assuming it's still good should the need arise, but...
Excellent. All right, then.
Yeah, that little circle they leave in your wallet. That's a big deal in high school. You've got the circle on your wallet. Remember that?
And how many kids do you have? Let me see how, you know.
I have two girls.
Okay, so there are only a couple of them have failed.
Yeah. No, they're beyond my kith and kin now, though. One's in college and one's junior in high school, and I just try to stay out of their way. Because I'm a dad. You know, a bad mother, there is no such thing as a bad dad, really.
No.
If he shows up, you just got to show up.
Yep, you just have to be there occasionally if you can. You get all the credit.
Yeah.
My husband was once in line for a cup of coffee holding the baby and a baby Bjorn, and some woman tapped him on the shoulder and said, you are such a good dad. And I thought, what in heaven's name would I have to do to have a stranger tell me I was a good mother? I would have to, you know, perform an emergency tracheotomy on one kid while changing the baby's diaper.
Yeah.
And helping the older one with her trigonometry homework. Then yeah. Maybe someone might say, okay, you did good.
Yeah. Or at least a good Heimlich maneuver or something.
Yes, exactly.
But and on the converse of that, there are the mommy police all around, people who are looking for bad mothers.
Absolutely.
And has that happened to you, where you've been accused of, you know, on the site of a bad mothering situation?
I remember once my youngest kid has a really hard time breastfeeding. He had a jaw defect, and I was once in the same cafe, in fact, online, getting a cup of tea, and I was feeding him from the bottle. And the bottle, the breast milk in the bottle, I had pumped at 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was stained purple from the gentian violet I was using to cure this horrible case of thrush. I had been pumping every 2 hours for months, and this woman taps me on the shoulder, and she says, "You know, breast is best." And what I should have done is dumped the purple breast milk over her head. But
yes.
Instead, I burst into hysterical tears and explained the whole situation to her.
Yeah.
And she told me, you know, you're doing a good job, but you really should be trying a little harder to get him on the breast.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I do it too. That's the terrible thing is
yeah. Have
you
done
turn
that?
Into the... Yes. I remember once going up to... we had just had a mercury poisoning scare with my oldest daughter. She ended up having mercury poisoning from eating too much canned tuna. And I saw a pregnant woman in the grocery store, and she was buying canned tuna fish, and I went up to her, and I launched into the story. And after about 2 seconds, I noticed that her eyes were kind of glazed over, and she's backing away from me, and I thought, oh, for God, what am I doing? Never mind, eat all the tuna you want. I'm just going to go back and, you know, shop for non-partially hydrogenated vegetable oil snacks for my toddler.
Yeah. And, you know, and, oh, boy, that's something. To think that you would do that.
Yeah,
after,
right.
After all you've gone through.
Goes, so it's impossible to resist.
After that trial you had a public trial on Oprah.
Yes, I did.
Did you get apologies for what, you know, eventually did they come around and see your point when you explained
right.
Exactly where you're coming from?
Well, they came around on the show because
yeah.
Oprah was on my side and Oprah's audience. I mean, you know, they're not gonna buck Oprah. And in fact, they didn't even realize they were. It was like a cruise ship turning in the water, you know. It was like this big turn. By the end of the show, they were all saying, oh, we love Ayala. We just don't like the way she said it. But there was, on the show, there were women who were sort of put on as the example of the good mothers, the wonderful mothers, the, you know, the mothers who pay close attention to their children.
Mm-hmm.
And they emailed me afterwards and they said, you know, our marriages are in shambles. We don't know what to do. Please help us. Please help us.
Yeah.
So my advice was things like, you know, first get rid of the harpsichord. Not everybody in the family has to play a separate stringed instrument.
Yeah.
That's a good
true.
Point.
But, well, you went through a thing for a while where you wanted exceptional children, right? I mean,
I was, you know, I thought it was the fault of one of your NPR fellows. All the children are above average. I was sure.
Oh yeah, him.
Were going to be him. Yeah. Yes, we want.
They're not all
great
like him,
unnamed.
Though.
No, yeah. You know, I thought all my kids would be, you know, the smartest kids in the gifted class, with, you know, playing the perfect,
yeah,
oboe or whatever.
Or at least early readers and early.
Early readers. I remember I called my mother once because my daughter was 7. Well, she was. She was in first grade, and she was reading basically at a first grade level, and I called up my mother, and I was saying how upsetting it was, and I said, she only reads at a first grade level, and my mother pointed out that, you know, she was in first grade, and I said, but I was such an early reader, and she said, what are you talking about? You didn't read till third grade. What the hell is wrong with you? We figured the short bus was going to be stopping at our house. And I said, really, I remember myself as so profoundly gifted. How is it that I don't? Really, are you sure? Yeah.
But was it the same sort of thing going on the Michael side of the family? I mean, in his background, the sort of, you know, family, whatever, arrangement, attentions, or expectations, let's say?
Well, you know, he really did read when he was 4 years old.
Oh, yeah.
So I think his... But his mother is much more easygoing. She's the neurotic Jewish Lady Jean managed to skip his mother. So
yeah.
She just said, oh, well, they're slower than he is.
Yeah, she's quiet. And
yeah, she's mellow, and she's nice to have around. If your own mother is crazy like I am, it's really nice to have a grandmother who's very calm to go to.
You had a problem with her at first, though, because of the...
I was just jealous at first.
Yeah.
I was terribly jealous.
Did you fight over Michael?
She didn't fight. She opted out of the fight, but I fought alone, which maybe kind of defines, you know, everything is that I fight alone. But, I set out to separate the man from his mother. And it was only once I did that I could be magnanimous. And yeah. I think that's a daughter-in-law phenomenon. You know, I wrote this essay about that, and every time I read that to a group of older women, they laugh and laugh and laugh, because that relationship between the mother and the daughter-in-law is a tormented one.
Yeah.
We ultimately reached a wonderful peace. I think as soon as I had sons and she realized that I was going to be paying the price myself one day,
yeah,
it was all good.
Yeah, so you're compatriots at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
But what you did the thing like we love that movie. We
yes, exactly.
You made you a plural.
We think that's a terrific restaurant.
Yeah.
We'd be happy to take you with us to the movies. Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing.
How did Michael deal with it? I mean, in our family, my brother Clayton, the oldest brother, literally his wife and my mother fought over him, and almost to the point of tugging him in different directions. But that's the only thing I know of like that. But how did Michael...
I'm sure Michael did exactly what Clayton did, which is pretend that none of it was happening.
Yeah, okay. That's
great. Yeah, right? Isn't that what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, I don't know. She didn't fight over any of the rest of us. I thought I was kind of hurt, actually, being the youngest. So. But then it no longer mattered.
She was
just
exhausted by then. Listen,
yeah.
I have four kids. I can tell you, by the fourth, you know, I forgot to teach the fourth kid how to tie his shoes. It slipped my mind.
Bunny ears.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying for the past 3 days.
Yeah, bunny ears. Well, it does, you know, like the thing about the pictures, you know, you have all those tons of pictures, picture books of the first child.
Right.
And videos.
After album.
Yeah.
I have a phone for the fourth kid. The fourth kid gets kid pictures on my phone. The other ones have albums with, you know, stuck on corners and little captions. And,
yeah.
And he's got a phone full of shots. And if I get a new phone, forget it. His childhood, the documentation of his childhood is over.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Now, and Michael seems a little more reluctant to share some of the more intimate details, but he did come out with a book sort of to rival yours, I guess, about you know, being a man, but about being a father as well.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of the good father antidote to the bad mother.
Yeah. And I just sort of went, now the children are in both those books, and how do they, is it the same family that he talks about, that you talk about in your book?
It is funny. It's there are some incidents where we write about the same thing, but our memory, his memory, is faulty. Let's just say, so you see it from both points of view. Like he says that incident where he was standing in line at a cafe happened in the grocery store.
Oh,
it happened in a cafe, but he remembers the grocery store.
That's significant.
Yeah. There you go.
That was the only one, but and probably he doesn't want to spill the beans on too much of this stuff. But and you don't mind. You don't mind being personal about things and
being personal too. It's a
revealing.
Pretty personal book, his book.
Yes.
He's personal in the way that men are personal, which is they say things and
reluctantly.
They don't even they're reluctant, but they end up saying them, and so you know, you admire them for their reluctance, but women you just, you know, criticize for their willingness to discuss. But in the end the same thing is written about, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I wonder how that works out. And you outsold him, I think, didn't you? That's the important
tell
thing.
You.
I asked him that too. Actually, when I spoke with him, and he said,
"I will say that my book made the New York Times bestseller list, and this book of his did not."
Yes,
but,
okay.
You know, that's a rare occurrence.
That's okay.
Yeah,
that's okay.
That's why he's doing that much more laundry and sorting.
Yeah. Yelena, I want to thank you for taking time to speak with us, and I know you got stuff you probably want to get to, but thanks for taking the time. Bad Mother.
Thank you so much. It was a delight. I listen to you every week, so.
Oh, thank you very much.
Beyond.
Yelena Waldman, ladies and gentlemen, from Berkeley, California. Yeah. Well, you know, each week at this time, we honor a town, village, or burg. Somewhere across the U.S. on a rearranged map of the same. With our town of the week, here is our very own Jim Packard.
Away from the hustle and bustle of Memphis, you can enjoy a glimpse of the Old South in the antebellum capital of the Mid-South, Holly Springs, Mississippi. Lots to see here, as there are about 175 historic homes and buildings charmingly preserved in the area. Holly Springs was founded by a group of Virginia entrepreneurs headed by Cephas and Jack Randolph, who bought the land from the Chickasaw Indians. The town's original name was Suavatuki. Holly Springs is home to the Strawberry Plains National Audubon Sanctuary and Education Center. Each fall, especially in September, thousands of hummingbirds migrate through the forests and fields of Strawberry Plains, fueling up for the long journey across the Gulf of Mexico. This annual event will be celebrated in Holly Springs.
What? I'm sorry. You say they migrate?
Yes.
Hummingbirds migrate?
Yes, they do.
From where to where?
From the United States to Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you making this up, Jim?
No. This is true.
It's true.
Okay.
Yeah. And it'll be celebrated in Holly Springs the weekend of September 10th.
A special kind of hummingbird, or is it any?
It's all the hummingbirds. They go through Strawberry Plains.
You're telling me that every hummingbird there is migrates through.
No, I don't see that every hummingbird there is that travels that path. There are other routes.
And would you happen to know those, Jim?
The hummingbird highways. That'll be next week.
Okay.
I'll get that too.
So this is like a migration path, you're saying?
This is a migration path.
And where do they?
It occurs in September.
They winter in Mexico?
In Mexico.
You know
where? They go across the Gulf of Mexico. Actually, they probably go to any number of those countries in South America, South and Central America.
Any number of those countries in South and Central America? Sounds like you're making all this up.
No, I'm not.
Can you name one of those countries that they
Ecuador.
All right, you win.
In Holly Springs, you'll find art galleries, historic churches, Rust College, the birthplace of the Civil Rights Movement, and Graceland 2. It has an unbelievable collection of Elvis memorabilia, floor to ceiling, including the ceiling, compiled by the King's biggest fan, Paul McLeod. The home that was chosen by General U.S. Grant to house his wife and son during the Civil War is located here. It's the Walter Place. Golf Digest rates the town's Kirkwood National Golf Course as one of the top 50 courses in the nation. Home of the Holly Springs Hawks athletic teams and world-famous hamburgers at Phillips Grocery, voted best offbeat destination in the whole state. It's our town of the week, Holly Springs, Mississippi.
Well, it sounds like quite a place. And that's not far from Oxford, is it?
No, it's not. It's about 30 miles.
Down the road there?
Mm-hmm.
Do the hummingbirds actually go through Oxford on their way to Holly Springs? Is there
Like a river, they move daily through the forests and fields of Strawberry Plains. It doesn't say anything about traveling through Oxford, though.
Yeah.
But since Oxford is, what, directly south?
Yes.
Yes? It sounds
it's between
reasonable.
Them and Ecuador.
It sounds reasonable that they would pass through there as well.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And is it? It's not their mating thing, is it? They mate in Holly
Springs?
There's
a certified bird bander captured 10 different species of hummingbirds and over 1,600 individuals during one winter. So
did they release
kinds.
Them then? Is it, yeah. is it capture and release
yeah.
with hummingbirds?
Yeah.
Well, it's a fascinating thing. Anyhow, right now, Lyle is calling out randomly, although Lois is not available. You're still trying, aren't you, Lyle? He's throwing his hands up. He's exasperated.
Stressful.
What?
Very busy.
No, she went to a protest of some sort, and she'll be at her phone at 11:30.
A protest of what, did she say?
She did, but I forgot what it was.
Did it involve
hummingbirds or the slaughter, needless slaughter of hummingbirds?
No, but she's going to be out looking at the hummingbirds in a couple of weeks.
Oh, she is? Yeah. She mentioned that?
Yes, she did. They're very proud of them.
Okay. What else did she say? We can maybe just do it this way. Does she like Holly Springs?
She loves Holly Springs.
Did she grow up there?
I believe so.
She did?
Yes.
Was she born there even?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Does she still have family in Holly Springs? Or?
I believe so.
Yeah. If we were coming to Holly Springs, Lyle, where would Lois take us?
Oh, well, that was a secret. She wouldn't reveal that to me.
She wouldn't?
No, she wouldn't tell me. She would only tell you.
Okay. Well,
she would take you if, you know, we're coming to Holly Springs.
Can we call her later then and...
Well, by all means, she's going to be at this phone number at the museum after 11:30, she said.
Which museum is that then, Lyle?
I think it's the Holly Springs Museum.
Oh, okay. In Holly Springs?
In Holly Springs.
Okay.
If, of course, she's not arrested at the protest.
What?
She's not arrested at the protest.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that protest there. Jonathan from Verona says, I work at Epic. That's good. If I hadn't written this question, would you still have called on me? No. Would have been logistically impossible. Where is Jonathan? How are you?
Hi.
Hi, okay. See, that's why. That wouldn't have drawn me to you necessarily, that response. It's friendly, but it doesn't promise a lot. Do you have more you want? Okay, all right. I'm sorry now. I'm shortchanging Jonathan here because there's more on his mind than just that. Yes. Okay, get you to stand up there, Jonathan. And would you mind? Okay. I'm not going to frisk you or anything, man. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Yeah. Fine, thank you. Yeah. So there's something more you wanted to add to that.
Yeah. We were wondering as we were driving over what... So were you going to force us to answer questions or turn in questions? We were wondering how the whole turn in question thing happened. That's where the question came from. Yeah.
You're worried about that? Because you didn't have a good question to put on your card?
Exactly. So that's why I came up with that question.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't good, but it got you a lot of attention.
Exactly. And
so it was good in that sense.
And it was going for the attention.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you have a question you were tossing around in your mind that you would ask? You
know? Yes. We were wondering if you had a day job.
Okay. Can you get me on an Epic? I hear they're doing really well out there. And thank you very much. You can sit down now, really. First he doesn't want to get up, then he doesn't want to sit down. That's Jonathan for you. We got the Odgers.
Odgers. That's right here.
All right. No, you're not the Odgers. I know the Odgers when I see him.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yeah. What's your first name?
Ed.
Oh, yeah, that's you. All right, then and then we got...
Karen.
Are you an Odger?
Not yet.
Oh, can you marry into the Odgers?
Possibly.
Yeah. And you're...
I'm the mother.
Hi.
Bernice.
Hi, Bernice. How are you? Bernice is my favorite name of all time. Did you know that? And you're...
I'm the last in line of the heirs here. I'm the baby. I'm Tom Odgers.
Odgers. I was saying Odgers. A lot of people make that mistake.
Yes, indeed. Like Dodgers without the first D, the best way to describe it.
Have you said that before, you think?
Yes, many times.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you ever think of playing for the Dodgers just for the happy coincidence?
Just having to deal with an odd name. I prefer Rodgers without the R myself, but... Okay. That's fine.
Well, you're the youngest. You're right to your opinion. And, you know, why is it that... Odgers, why is it that... they never tell you where you're from in Iowa. You're from Iowa County. You're not from Iowa, you're from Iowa County.
Yeah, we're really in the township of Arena, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what are you doing out there?
Oh, just live on a little farm there and ride horses and...
Raising things and growing things?
Yeah, a little of that.
You know what any of them are? Or what sort of things?
Horses, mostly, yeah.
Oh, yeah? What sort of horses do you have?
Quarter horses.
Quarter horses? Can't afford the whole one, or...?
No, They eat far too much, yes.
So then are you the horse trainer and all that? Or?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Did Bernice know that when she met you?
He makes saddles, too.
What?
He makes saddles.
Really?
From scratch.
You can't make a saddle from scratch, Bernice. I've scratched many times and never got a saddle out of it.
No, he does. He's very...
Well, he's very talented. Is that what first attracted you to Ed?
Well, I always liked him. Even when he was little, I liked him already.
You know him when he was little?
I did, right away.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was it out there in...
minutes old, I liked him right away.
Oh. He was a few minutes old, or you were?
He was.
Yeah. I'm that in the incubators, or
mother.
What?
I'm the mother, you know. Get it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, Ed is your son.
Yeah, right.
Now I get it.
You're really quick.
Well, I'm not from Iowa County. What do I know? Yeah. Oh, all right. Okay. Now I got this straight. Okay. Thank you very much for... Yeah.
You're welcome. Yes. You're welcome.
And so even as a little boy, he could make saddles? Is that what you're saying?
Well, not right away, but he gradually eased into it.
Your youngest here is sitting there laughing. You can hear about it on the way home.
A little weird, you know. We're all a little weird.
Well, you know, we have something for the Odgers, don't we?
Oh, indeed we do.
Without
We've got
a D.
That... late summer picnic with some choice wines like Domaine du Sac or the Prairie Fumé from the Waldersheim Winery.
Yeah. Yeah? Perfect. Perfect.
Tomorrow, in fact.
Picnic. Have the picnic. Picnic? What's the picnic for?
For fun.
What?
It's for fun.
Oh, okay, thank you, Bernice. I had to get that in there. What?
Did Ed have a question?
Oh, yeah. Do you know, what do you know that we don't know? Okay. What do you do to think funny, was Bernice's question. Okay. Or do you think you're funny, I think. What?
Do you think funny? How do you get into the funny mood?
Funny thinking? Yeah. Well, you just put yourself in the position of someone who would be funny. If you analyze it, it goes away immediately, so I've discovered, so I don't like to really get into the nuts and bolts of it.
Wouldn't you look in the mirror, too? Would that
help? Oh, Bernice. We're taking that wine back, Bernice. Look in the mirror. See, you could do it then, Bernice. You could do this. Easy. Yeah. No, you're not. Jim, I think we got to go launch ahead here into the quiz, don't we?
We've got to go to the quiz, Mike.
Would you have told me that if I hadn't asked, Jim?
Well, you still have 3 minutes and 30 seconds before before the horn.
Herb Brodsky is here all the way from Denver, Colorado. It is Herb Brodsky Day in southern Dane County. Yes, Herb Brodsky. Hello, Herb Brodsky. Would you do the honors, please, Herb, and the four disclaimers? You can hold that.
I never held a mic, really, for so many years. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not.
You got your bifocals on.
Trifocals. No, Mary has trifocals. Okay. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. Woo! Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
Right. Take that, a little souvenir of your visit here, Herb Brodsky, ladies and gentlemen. Let's see the hands of those of you who want to try them at the quiz. This is a chance for you to win fabulous prizes. Simply for knowing what you know, would he be all right, though? The baby will be okay? Yeah? Because little Jacob there, right?
Actually, I think my mom will do it.
Yeah?
It's her birthday.
Yeah?
No, it's her birthday, too.
No.
Yeah.
Do you want to fight, arm wrestle over it, or I mean?
No,
she
should go.
Huh?
She should go.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. We got to find out if you qualify or not.
Okay.
What is your name?
Rachel? Yeah.
And, Rachel, give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
Because it's my mom's birthday present.
Your mom's birthday present. That's sweet. Rachel, come on up there. You're already up there. Oh. You gotta slow down there, Rachel.
Sorry.
That little Jacob is very well behaved.
He's all right.
Yeah?
Most of the time.
He's all right most of the time? You want this copy of Bad Mother?
Sure.
No, he's adorable. And look, he's very, really pleased you're up here. Oh, excellent. You know how this quiz works?
Yep.
Okay, general knowledge kind of thing. Someone calls in, plays along with you. And Jim Packard, what are those? What is the question and how do they get through?
This is an encore performance, so don't call today, but save your call for another time.
Okay, if you could travel back in time and kill your grandfather before he procreates, you would be illustrating the what paradox? That's the question. Ron's online from Hubbard, Ohio. I have to explain this all over again. This is a tough concept, I know, but it's a paradox of time travel. Ron, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You ever thought about time travel, Ron?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you think about that?
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. So you travel back in time, you kill your grandfather before he procreates. That's called the what paradox?
I don't know.
Oh. Regarding your grandfather, it would be called the what paradox?
I would just think the grandpa paradox.
That's right. That's it. That's it. It's as simple as that.
Really?
Yes. Because then you would never have been born, and that would be the paradox is laid at your grandpa's feet as a result. So that's why time travel is paradoxical, because you could do that, theoretically.
Lucky guess on my part.
Way to go, Ron.
Okay.
Are you into time travel, though?
Sure.
Cool. Ron, this is Rachel.
Hi.
Hello, Rachel.
Rachel, Ron, you are a team right now, so you work together and collaborate on this and think it through, and you'll do well. Jim Packard, what are those categories?
Categories of current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science or odds and ends.
Okay. Ron, you can take the first one.
Let's try current events.
Current events right out of the news, maybe not. Iran's president, I need a shave a bad, called this a messenger of honor and human generosity and a savior of mankind before being a messenger of death. What was he referring to?
I think it was a death drone.
Ah. Yeah, their drone, the Iranian drone. You want to go along with that thing? Yes. Very good, yes. The death drone. And the savior of mankind. So,
one right, no wrong.
All right, what's left there, Jimmy?
People, places, school, science, odds and ends.
Rachel? Science.
Science, okay. The Ruddy Duck's Penis is the title of this piece. The Ruddy Duck's is a corkscrew penis, actually. It's very interesting. Increases with one of the following. Is it with water temperature, with competition, or with female Ruddy Ducks? This has been studied at Yale, by the way, so this is totally legitimate. I'm not even making this up. The Ruddy Duck's penis increases with water temperature, competition with other Ruddy Ducks.
I think competition.
Competition. What makes you say that?
Well,
or is that prying? No.
No, just, you know, they have to compete with other male ducks to get the female. So.
Ron, what do you think? Want to weigh in on this?
What was answer B?
Competition.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yes, competition. Wow.
Our government tax dollars support.
Yeah, probably funding that at Yale there, and you know, they break off and regrow every season, so that's really something to think about.
Oh.
But only at Yale.
Two right, no wrong.
Okay. Well, what's left there, Jim?
People, places, school, odds and ends.
Back to you, Ron.
Let's try people.
People. All right. A study finds that attractive women are overlooked for jobs in one of the following areas. Is it mechanical engineering, reality television, or maintenance and custodial?
I would say maintenance and custodial.
Or reality television or mechanical engineering.
Reality television?
It seems that way to me, but I don't. That's probably, I just put that in there because I have a feeling about those people. But
oh, okay.
That would leave mechanical engineering, I guess.
Yeah, mechanical engineering.
Ron?
Yeah, maybe I would go along with that.
Yeah, mechanical engineering. It's, can't get taken seriously as mechanical engineering. That's a problem.
That's three right, and they've won the quiz.
Yeah.
They can stop here and take a prize, or they can go on and try for the mother load. They do have to answer two questions correctly from our three remaining categories, win a treasure trove of prizes, and if they miss either one of those, they're going to have some advice from Bernice Odger.
Okay.
Do you want to continue?
Ron?
I would say you make the call, Rachel.
I say continue.
Let's go on.
Right on. Let's give them a little enthusiastic encouragement. So you got to get both right, huh, there, Jim?
That's right.
That's how it works. What's left there?
Places, school, odds and ends.
Okay. Back to you, Rachel. Huh?
School?
School, things you should have learned in school. I had been paying attention. If you're having coronal mass ejections, what are you? Coronal mass ejections.
Crying?
No, what I mean, what entity or object or
sunspots?
What?
Sunspots?
Yes, that's so. You would be the
sun.
The sun?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, sun. You would be the sun. You're having sun. You're having solar flares flaring up again. That's what those are. Coronal mass ejections of your coronal mass.
That's right. Four right, no wrong.
Very good. Well, what's left then, Jim?
Well, it comes down to places or odds and ends.
Places, odds and ends. Ron, I think. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's try, how about places, Rachel?
Sure.
All right. Residents of Queens, Milwaukee, or Norman, Oklahoma almost never buy anything without a coupon.
Say Queens.
Queens is good.
That's your choice, Ron.
No.
What was the other choice?
Milwaukee or Norman, Oklahoma.
What was the Queens. Is it Queens?
New York. Queens, New York. Or residents of Milwaukee, for example.
Oh.
Or Norman, Oklahoma. Just down the road here in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee.
And I know my mother was an inveterate clipper. Yep.
They never buy things without coupons?
Almost never. You can't say never.
Queens, maybe?
No, Milwaukee. Milwaukee now.
You think Milwaukee?
Yeah.
You think my mother is influencing you on this somehow?
Yeah, just a little.
Coupon clipping. Anyone here from Milwaukee? Yes, do you clip coupons? He does. She doesn't. Wow.
Interesting.
Cool. See Milwaukee, Ron?
Yeah, let's go along with her.
Milwaukee, number one in the nation, coupon clipping. Gotta save that 10 cents. What have they won, Jim Packer?
Well, Ron, you're going to slide out of bed and walk in the steps of the master with a pair of plush, comfy Freudian slippers with the patented red tongue toes from the Unemployed Philosophers Guild.
Oh, yeah.
And you've won the book 100 Words Every Middle Schooler Should Know from the editors of American Heritage Dictionaries from Houghton Mifflin, a can koozie from the Bubba Gump Shrimp Company, a pair of junior-sized Japanese-style ring-bound study cards from the Mindology Company, a What Do You Know pin from Say Cheese Designs, and the CD compilation, The First 25 Are the Hardest, from Michael Feldman's What Do You Know.
Right.
And for you, Rachel, once you've assembled your bucket list, you can keep its contents in a pair of all-metal beer buckets from Cincinnati's Hudepohl Shingling Brewing Company, makers of Little King's Original Cream Ale. It's good to be the king. You might also strike it rich with a complimentary bag of rough mining gemstones from the Cave of the Mounds, a national natural landmark. Go east to the Rochester Deli in Waukesha for some tasty delights that you can keep in the insulated travel cooler. On the way back, contemplate the precepts from Jack Bowen's book. If you can read this, The Philosophy of Bumper Stickers from Random House, and savor a quarter centuries of laugh on the CD, The First 25 of the Hardest, from Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? Congratulations to both of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Nice job. Congratulations. Ron, hang on for a second.
Our next live shows in Madison are September 22nd and September 29th at Monona Terrace. Tickets at notmuch.com or by calling 608-262-2201.
We have Lois. Is this her phone call?
This is the actual Lois.
Yeah, this is her one phone call. Lois Shipp from Holly Springs, Mississippi. And Lois, is this the one phone call you were allowed?
This is it.
Yeah. Did they haul you in on this? What was this protest? We're worried about you.
Thank you for being worried about me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling me. I'm really excited about this call.
Yeah, but what was the protest, Lois?
The program, the one this morning?
Yeah.
It was absolutely wonderful. A World War II vet told us his experiences on the front line.
Oh.
He never got over being a private.
Oh.
I mean, he worked his way through, but he never got higher than a private.
Okay.
But he lived.
Well, why were you protesting that?
Sir?
Why were you protesting that?
Oh, I wasn't protesting. Woo, never.
Oh, so it was a good little speech, and he shared his recollections with you and so forth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Was that at the museum?
No, it was at the library.
At the library.
We
okay.
run parallel.
Oh, you do?
Right. In other words, they have a place, and we have a place.
Yeah.
And we're both great.
Yes, and you're there at the Holly Springs Museum.
I know it's the Marshall County Historical Museum.
I'm sorry. Okay.
And I want to tell you about the museum.
Please do.
40 years ago in 1970,
mm-hmm.
We realized that historic Marshall County and Holly Springs needed a museum.
Right.
We needed a place to put our beautiful treasures.
Right.
And we had no place. So they were fixing to tear down this magnificent building, which was in shambles. It needed to be restored mm-hmm. badly, and they were going to tear it down and make it into a parking lot.
What was the building, Lois?
It had been a college dormitory.
Oh.
And it was three floors, mm-hmm. and it was yellow brick. You know, it's right two blocks from the square, the main
Perfect.
Part of town.
Ideal.
And I said, how terrible they're going to tear that historic building down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's give it to us. I went to the owners and said, give it to us. We need to make a museum out of it. And so the Historical Society went with me to see them, and they said, no, we went back again, again, and again. And each time they said no. And I said, okay, this was the fifth time. And I said, let's try one more time. Mm-hmm. So we went there, and they were waiting for us. They said, okay, you can have it for a museum. And I never were walking out saying, oh, my, how do you start a museum? I don't know how to start a museum.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't need it. Yes, we do.
You had second thoughts.
But we had no money, not even a penny.
Yeah.
And so how we go start a museum without a penny?
No.
This was in 1970.
Right.
And so everybody pitched in and did all the work free.
Wow,
everybody
that's
pitched
cool.
in, went home, and cleaned out their trunks and their attics. And they brought things that we could never have afforded.
Uh-huh.
The first thing that we got was a wooden bathtub with a zinc lining.
Wooden bathtub with a zinc lining. Who had that?
Well, I had that.
Oh, yeah.
That's probably the first thing.
Oh, that was yours. Where did you get that?
I lived in a fantastic house that had the first bathtub in North Mississippi in it. And I had six kids in a wooden tub. And so I couldn't throw it away, but I put it out on the back porch. And I said, okay, we can have a bathtub.
So you had the first bathtub in Northern Mississippi?
Yeah. And it's wood with a zinc lining. And it caught rainwater from the eaves.
Oh.
In other words, it was quite an operation.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never did use it. And today, we have 100,000 things.
No kidding. You still got the bathtub, and you got... where did all the rest of this come from?
Listen. The county just redid the whole building. It's mm-hmm. the county museum, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so the county has just done an extensive renovation on it.
Mm-hmm. But I mean now that you have like 100,000 artifacts.
We do. And listen, we are here 5 days a week from 10 to 5, and we're here on Saturday most of the time.
Except when you're at protests.
And
we don't know why. Mm-hmm. Lois, I could talk with you all day. We have to go, but I want to thank you so much for sharing all that with us. And we have a little something for you.
Lois, we're going to send you the glory of America's Dairyland with a fantastic selection of 10 delicious premium certified organic cheeses and butters from Lafarge, Wisconsin's Organic Valley family of farms. So make room in your refrigerator.
I can't wait.
Okay, I hope you enjoy that. Thank you, Lois Schiff.
Thank you so much for calling me.
And thank you for giving us this beautiful insight to Holly Springs, Mississippi Art Town of the Week.
Tickets are on sale for a live What Do You Know show from the Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls, Iowa on September 8th. Get yours by calling 319-273-4TIX or follow the links at iowapublicradio.org. Michael and the gang head to the Red River Valley for a live What Do You Know show from Festival Concert Hall on the North Dakota State University campus in Fargo on October 20th. Tickets available now by calling 701-231-7969 or click on prairiepublic.org/radio.
You know, each week at this time, we read actual memos sent in by actual listeners. That's right. Thanks for the memos. And the letters also in communications. By the way, someone asked the other day, are there words to the What Do You Know theme, and could John sing them?
No and no.
Okay.
I could write some lyrics.
Yeah. Would you do that?
Sure.
Have them by next time?
Yeah, for our next 20, for the 50th anniversary.
Okay, that'd be great. You can remember to do that, though. Okay. I own Prisoners, audience-wise, I mean. I'm a favorite in many lockups around the country, and including Federal Correctional Institution McKean in Bradford, Pennsylvania, and I'm always glad to hear from these guys, but... You know, when you get out, and I certainly hope you do, don't look me up, please. I can't help you beyond this. It's just I just do radio, that's all. But he says, I'm listening to you give away wine to a lady who met two guys in the laundry. Been a fan of your show since 98 in Sitka, Alaska, NPR. Currently, it's cloudy, Sunday afternoon, 3:30 p.m. Your show is a favorite along with Living on Earth and Folk Music on NPR, WPSU, Pennsylvania State. Shout out. I'm in special housing unit, segregation. The show is extra enjoyable. Because I am. The U.S. Bureau of Prisons allows a Walkman radio, but at McKean, no legal work until it's approved. So unless I get my criminal appeal work and several civil claims pending or get myself represented, I may be stuck listening to What Do You Know? So thank you very much, Thomas Senske over there, and good luck to you, Thomas. There are many listeners, and I always think they should include them in our audience figures.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, you know, yeah. They can't get away from it. You know, I mean they're stuck there, but they don't have to listen, though, and I think it's an important segment of our audience. John Hoffheimer says, if International House of Pancakes is abbreviated IHOP, is International House of Radio abbreviated IHOR? Oh, thought of that. Listening to your 25th anniversary show today in WGVU in Muskegon. Been a fan of yours for at least 26 years. First time I heard you was on WGN. I was living in Wheaton. You were co-hosting with that former copter reporter. I still remember the conversation with her about Consuelo, who you said was your housekeeper. You would sometimes talk about the two of you at home. I also remember that you seemed to be a little hypersensitive when your co-host kidded you on the air by saying something like, are you two ever going to get married? And that you snapped at her by saying something like, will you lay off me? Why do you keep asking me that? I don't remember this. Never. Then I remember several seconds of dead air, maybe the sound of a door slamming. After that, I don't remember you hearing again that day. Well, by the way, at the risk of making you hypersensitive, I have to ask, did you ever marry Consuelo? No, she had to go back to Uruguay. Hello, Michael. I was listening to your show last Saturday when you were looking for a wedding to crash. You were told an Appleton call that you would get to Appleton or Nina, but not Menasha. What the heck were you thinking? Yeah, I'm just kidding. I always do Menasha jokes. Right, they never exactly. Go over, but I don't know why I do them. But Twin City, Nina, Menasha. You know, all the churches are in Nina and the bars are
bars
in Menasha.
Are in Menasha.
You know, the usual thing. It's like Kenosha and Racine, you know, same thing. You got to go to Menasha. It's a new Bohemia of the Fox Valley, the new Soho. We have the Wild Apple Gallery, the Wreath Factory, Otter Creek Landscape, the Mix Design Center, the Art Affair, Out of Hand Gallery, and the best wine shop and single malt scotch selection north of Chicago at Club Liquor. We have a 100 Slip Marina, some cool bars, Jitters, Club Tavern, the Blind Pig, the Menasha Grill, best Cajun menu, the Salsa Bar, star of the movie The Hungry Bull. Come on, that's not true. And where else can you get new 1970s, 80s vintage disco with a spinning mirror ball than at the Attic in Menasha?
That's what I'm talking about.
Two-wheeled Tuesday at the Locker Room attracts over 100 motorcycles a week. Michael, wake up. If you don't Menasha, you don't know Menasha, then you don't know hip. Okay, Jim Putman. I'll see you up there. We're going to be doing a show in Menasha.
Yeah, when is it?
Yeah. So
no.
We'll find out if all this is true. It sounds like we're going to Valhalla, but, it'll be Menasha. Bob Stuckert, I heard your lament about the Madison Airport needing a snappy name. It has one already, Truax Field. Okay. All right, that's true. But the airport itself, they don't call it Truax Field. I just thought they should call it something other than Dane County Airport because it sounds like they fly, you know, as far as Bloomer, Wisconsin, and then back again, you know. So they call it, you know, International. That's all they got to do. Dane County International Airport.
International Airport.
Yeah. We fly to the UP or something, you know. And I know the UP is not international, but to us it is. Beware cash bar, especially in Chippewa. Duncan knows what's up. The whole town would show up for an open bar. Okay, that was enough. We were looking for a place to go during the Chelsea wedding. We had no place to go. Here's another one, a cash bar. Our bar bill was over $17,000 when his daughter got married. Julianne Jacobs Griffin. So she thinks it's justified. Okay. International Left-Handers Day was on the same day as our anniversary. Hi, Michael, long-time listener. One of the funniest things I ever heard on the show was when you ask one of the audience a question. What is it that a Scotsman wears under his kilt? And her response was, it's never worn, it's always fresh. Okay. Tesla came up the other day because we were doing county fair, and Tesla was playing one of the county fairs, and none of us could remember their big hit. Turns out it was called Love Song. Test by Tesla.
Yeah, rock and roll.
Yeah. Do you remember that? Love Song by Tesla. Okay, this guy said no one would be calling in from a county fair. What are you thinking? Okay. Amadeus was actually the best picture of 1984. Okay, so Color Purple was the best picture in 1985. I said that, the reunion thing, whatever it was. Okay, that's not good. Oh, global humidity. Tracy Coombs says, I shared your crack about global humidity with Russ Feingold, who's our senator running again, at Sunday's annual picnic in Middleton, and gave you credit. He laughed, but probably won't use it in any debate over sunspots with Ron Johnson. That's a big issue right now, whether or not there is global warming over Wisconsin.
Right.
And by the way, there is, for future reference, there is such a thing as global humidity, apparently. So I was inadvertently right about something. Because of global warming, though. Okay. Which came first, the global warming or the global humidity?
That's the eternal question.
Yes. I was disappointed, John Beach says, with your answer last week about the composition of the sun and stars. The fact is, we have known the composition of the stars and sun with great precision for most of a century. Cecilia Payne discovered about 1920 that the stars nearly all hydrogen and helium. Well, I think we're talking about trace elements here, John. So the nearly 100% hydrogen and helium does not mean they're all hydrogen. And I think we're talking about that we don't know the composition beyond the hydrogen and the obvious composition. And here's the actual memo sent in by someone. This is employees receive this memo, and it's short, and that's good. And here it comes from their boss, I guess. It says, and it reads just as, for all of you who left without your underwear, they are all here in the lobby. Those office parties are getting out of hand. Thank you very much for that memo, and send them all to us. That was a long way to go to get to a very short memo. And otherwise, it's just more bathroom memos and follow-up.
A lot of bathroom memos.
Earlier memos about men using the women's room, but that could go on next week easily, since we're not on. And so where can they send those, Jim?
Send all of those memos and communications to Thanks for the Memos, Michael Feldman, Wisconsin Public Radio, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Or you can go to the email address at whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, post it there.
Yeah.
Or you can go to notmuch.com, post it there.
Oh, you can do all that then,
sure,
huh?
Why not?
Yeah, and you gave the physical address. There is a physical address that you can actually send things to.
Yes.
You still do that kind of thing.
Yes.
And our Facebook, is, what is that, Chop
that's
Liver?
Right. Facebook, Michael Feldman Show.
Yeah.
What do you know?
What do you know, yeah. Check us out on Facebook and be our friend.
Oh,
be our like. They don't do friends anymore. You either like.
Oh.
So likes. Somebody likes. I don't know. It's kind of weird.
How many likers do you have?
Well, we're coming close to that 5,000 magic number when they throw you off of Facebook entirely.
Yeah.
Steve McCurry is one of the best photographers in the world. You've probably seen his work, even if you don't realize it, for National Geographic, and he's with the Magnum Group, and he's incredible. And also his war photography. He's been behind the lines in every major battle of recent years, and quite an amazing guy. And has the last roll of Kodachrome in the world. And it was the perfect guy to give it to, and he went out and shot the roll, and that's what National Geographic is doing a special on it. He's on the line with us now from New York. Hi, Steve, are you there?
I am here, yeah. Glad to be with you.
How are you doing? Where are you just back from?
My journeys have taken me from Los Angeles to Malaysia, and then I was in South Africa, Switzerland, Paris, my next destination is unknown at the moment, but there's always some amazing trip or opportunity waiting around the next corner. So my travel schedule has been rather hectic for, I would say, the last 30 years.
Yeah. Do you dispatch yourself to these places, or are these all assignment things?
They are, I would say, most are commissioned assignments. Although I do, you know, do a significant amount of work on my own. But I've worked for National Geographic since 1980 and other magazines and an occasional commercial kind of corporate shoot now and then.
And now you got to do it all without Kodachrome.
Yeah, well, you know, Kodachrome was probably the best film ever made. Surprisingly, it was invented by two musicians in Germany back in the 30s. I mean, the history goes way back. Right. But yeah, it was a great film. But actually, the world now is in many ways. I mean, there's still a lot of great films. I mean, a lot of photographers still love film and swear by film. So, mm-hmm. you know, film is still very much alive. Kodak makes a lot of, you know, wonderful films. It's just that this particular film, this legendary, iconic film, is now it's kind of over. But I'm working with digital photography now for several reasons.
Wow. Do you miss it, though? I mean, like you're saying, the silver halide group is a very big one, and they believe that life is more analog, maybe, than digital. And but you don't feel that way.
Well, there is a wonderful color palette and tonality to Kodachrome. I have maybe 800,000 Kodachrome transparencies in my archive. But much of my shooting takes place in very low light. I love working in temples and bars and people's homes and dark, you know, jazz clubs and places, alleys and you know. And with digital, you can work in much lower light. Yeah. Kodachrome required, you know, a tripod, or you'd have to use a flash, and it became very difficult to handhold. You know, late in the afternoon.
Yeah, and ASA 40 or something like that, or what was it?
ASA 64. And it had a Kodachrome 25, which, unless it was, you know, almost kind of bright and sunny, you know, you were kind of pushing it a bit.
Yeah, you had to shoot the sun basically to get it.
Yeah, I mean, it much of what I do is I just kind of wander the streets of a particular place and explore it with my camera, and often I'm outside, and then I'll kind of, you know, move inside. So I really need, in the old days, I would have two cameras. I'd have one with Kodachrome 64 and the other camera with Kodachrome 200. Mm-hmm. So if I happen to go inside for lunch or in somebody's home or whatever, inside a market, or I could switch cameras and go to the faster film. But and the beauty about digital is that you can do all of that with one camera, and you can shoot. You can go from a, you know, very bright sunny day into a very dark situation, and shoot in practically, you know, total darkness. I mean, it's amazing how sensitive and how low you can work in these days with digital. I use a Nikon X, and it's very, you know, great and kind of low light. D3X, it's just a beautiful camera with in low light.
Yeah, and the reason this is germane is because you were given the very last roll of Kodachrome produced, and the assignment was to go out and shoot the last roll of Kodachrome.
Yeah, excuse me. It was kind of an honor to be able to run that one last roll of film. And I haven't actually shot much film in the last few years. And to load that film into the camera, and it really brought back a lot of memories. And to, you know, I wanted to make each frame special and each frame count. So I decided to just use one exposure on most subjects just to, you know, get as much out of that role as I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not used to that way of working. I'm used to working, shooting through a situation, and often that takes, you know, dozens of pictures.
Right. So did the battery still work in your old camera? I mean, that's one thing. I have a Nikon that's pretty good, 35 millimeter. But the battery, you can't find a battery.
I have three or four film cameras ready to go at a moment's notice. The batteries worked, in fact. And then the question was, you know, well, where do you shoot?
Yeah, what do you,
shoot? And I thought, well, what better place to work and to, you know, photograph is in, you know, where I live since the last 30 years. So, and then I thought, which was New York, and then I thought, well, where have I spent much of my career and where, what foreign destination is kind of the nearest or the dearest and the place I'm most fond of, and that was sort of South Asia and India in particular. So kind of started off working in New York, photographed. I was looking for iconic situations and iconic people because, you know, I kind of felt Kodachrome was an iconic film. And I wanted to, so I kind of started the roll off. I was thinking, you know, what personalities in New York really stay in New York and really, and I thought, you know, well, somebody like Robert De Niro would be a good choice because he grew up in New York, lives in New York. A lot of his films, I admire his work a tremendous amount. A lot of his films take place in and around New York. So, we actually, you know, he lives a short way down the street from where I live in New York.
Mm-hmm.
So it seemed like a natural way to start the roll off. And then...
And he was okay with that, did he?
Yeah, well, he's... you know, he's knows a lot about art and photography, and you know, his father was a really, really accomplished painter.
Oh,
so he was very willing and happy to. So he went down to his studio and his office in Tribeca and photographed him there.
Mm-hmm. Did you try Woody Allen?
Woody Allen. We called him. They were interested. Called Martin Scorsese. Both out of town on location. So, they were definitely also part of my plan, but, you know, these directors are off and about probably most of the time.
Yeah, I guess he's probably in Barcelona shooting somewhere. He says he doesn't shoot in New York anymore. It's too expensive to do it, so.
Yeah, exactly. Although he lives here, I mean, whenever time, you know, the production is so expensive here that it makes more sense to film practically anywhere else.
And Paul Simon didn't want to do it, even though he wrote the song and everything?
Yeah, well, there's only so much time you want to devote to pursuing these things, and that just was not to be. And I'm sure the timing, you know, these people have, he's out on the road performing and to try and dovetail my schedule with his schedule. And then the film, we did actually a documentary, National Geographic documentary, on you know, shooting this last role. So the schedule was a bit tricky. We were here only in New York for a few days, and then we went off to India.
Yeah. And you only have, what, 36 shots? Is that what
you... Yeah, there's just 36 frames on the roll. And... you know, when I'm shooting otherwise, it's just, you go with your instincts, and you're never afraid to try this or try that or shoot, pictures which they're not maybe great, but at least it kind of gets the wheels moving. And sometimes I think of pictures as notes and kind of a diary, and although they're not, you know, masterpieces, sometimes you just want to shoot to record a particular situation or place or whatever. And sometimes, pictures, every situation you shoot isn't profound and wonderful. Often it's just you're amused by a particular shape or a person walking down the street or a particular light. So it's good to kind of keep working. So, but with this particular role, I wanted each image to stand alone. Mm-hmm. And the ironic thing was at the end, I had three exposures left in the camera when I got to Parsons, Kansas. Now, Parsons, Kansas is the only place in the world that develops Kodachrome film. That's it. I'd never heard of Parsons, Kansas. Yeah. And I flew out there.
Is it a drugstore, or who's the guy there?
Well, it's this amazing lab with these really friendly, helpful, professional people who are getting shipments of Kodachrome, and I think they're processing about 4,000 rolls of Kodachrome every week. In the past, you could get Kodachrome processed in, India, in Switzerland, Japan, Australia, many places up the street in New York, they processed it at ColorWorks. But now, it just one lab is left standing to for Kodachrome. So, here it is. It's 4:00 in the morning. I've gotten into Parsons, Kansas, and I had three frames to shoot, and I had to do it in the last 4 hours.
So, what'd you shoot in Parsons?
Well, I photographed. There was somebody sleeping on a park bench, and I have a. That's one of the themes that I've always enjoyed shooting. In fact, on my website, I have a whole section of people sleeping. And then I shot a picture of kind of a self-portrait in my hotel room. I just thought, well, that's
got to.
I should have some kind of record of, yep. of me on the roll.
Yep. Got to.
So, I did that. But the middle part of the shoot was all in India.
Mm-hmm.
And
was that more or less serendipity, or could you go to places that you'd shot before, or did you just kind of feel it out?
Yeah, I went to Bombay, and I went to kind of a remote part of Rajasthan. Was kind of a desert, and we actually went at the absolute worst time of the year when the heat is just the most intense. And like if somebody said to you, "What's the I want to go to India when it's the absolutely worst time?" what week is that? And that's the week that we were kind of there.
Yeah, what week is that? Just for future reference,
it's the week just before the monsoon starts.
Yeah.
When the heat and the humidity and it's just the air is still,
yeah.
and you just think you're going to die. And I was worried about the film because, heat is not a friend to any kind of film, for that matter. And there was no air conditioning where we were, so this film was sort of sitting in this, baking in this camera. And I was worried there might be some color shift or... and then we were going through all these X-ray machines. I must have gone through close to a dozen X-ray machines. And worried that there might be some damage from from that. But fortunately, it was okay.
Did you get some good... I bet you got some great stuff.
Yeah, I was pretty pleased with the India pictures, there's a, India's changing so rapidly, and a lot of the traditional tribes and way of life is quickly, the roads and communication and television. And all it's the way people, the architecture and the way people dress, and it's all just. It's changing before your eyes. It's so, from year to year, there are these amazing changes. And it's all, the whole world is sort of becoming kind of homogenous, at least is the way we all dress. And, and music and all of that. It's the Chinese have manufactured so many clothes that, I mean, you go into these really remote parts of Afghanistan or Tibet or in parts of Africa, and, you know, they're all wearing this, we're all wearing the same thing. The Gap will buy, I don't know how many tens of millions of pieces of clothing, but maybe there's a few million that are slightly off, and they all end up in some remote part of Afghanistan.
Yeah, with the Calvin Klein knockoffs from from China.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. By the way, we can. It's hard talking about the photographs without seeing them. But you produce iconic photographs. I mean, you have some of the most beautiful photographs. The iconic one I think of is the Afghan girl. That's kind of a famous photograph of yours. And is this can all be seen on your site, right?
Yeah. It's my website. www.stevemccurry.com.
Yeah, and stevemccurry.com.
The Afghan girl was a photograph I made in 1984. Was made on Kodachrome. That picture is as vibrant, and the colors are as true as they were when I took it back then. I inadvertently left some Kodachrome in a storage unit in 1979, and just a month or so ago, I went back to that storage unit and realized, to my horror, that I had film in this. It hadn't been, it was in the heat of the summer, and it was just still beautiful after all these years. I mean, all my archive is in an air-conditioned, kind of a very secure situation. But this film, although in the extreme heat and all that, was still fine. So it was a really that's one of the great things about Kodachrome, was how the archival and the longevity of this film, and how pictures from the 40s or 50s are still have a great look, and still the colors are still true.
Right, and there are pictures, because now with digital, we have pictures that will never be preserved, really, because they'll be on the cameras, and you get them. When the camera goes, the pictures will probably go with them, and not so much prints anymore, or certainly not slides.
Yeah, it's a huge problem, and the whole question we're in the infancy of digital photography, and the whole storage question and putting them on hard drives or DVDs or whatever. DVDs go bad. They're not perfect, and if you don't have your work backed up, I would say three times, you're running a real risk. If you're on discs, DVDs or whatever, they need to be changed out every few years. So you're right. Going through your drawer and finding old negatives or pictures or transparencies, those days are over.
Yeah. Plus the disappearance of the slideshow. I don't think young people can recognize how important the slideshow was to us for so many years, where we could go somewhere and then force people to watch the slides on a Kodak carousel.
Yeah.
And that happens no more.
Well, you can do a PowerPoint presentation, but I always found that the projector through that film was just beautiful, and somehow the PowerPoint presentation just doesn't have that. Everything looks sort of out of focus and a bit washed out.
So the 36, they're all shot, and Parsons did a good job on it. The processing came out well.
Yeah, I was.
You're happy with it?
I went out there and I met with them, and we walked into the lab, and we watched them load it up, and then when it came out, it was dried, and then they cut it up and mounted everything, and it was they were very friendly, very professional, and they're going to stop processing Kodachrome at the end of the year, and that'll be it. I mean, if you have a
So if you got it,
Kodachrome,
get it in.
It's just not going to be processed.
Yeah.
I think they said if you process it, it'll come out as black and white, but it won't have any color on it.
Oh.
So that's that's the end of the story.
That's a shame. Because I got a roll of Super 8. Do they do that?
Yeah, they can process all that, but not after the end of the year.
That's it.
I think
I better
it's
shoot
December
that.
Of this. Yeah, it's. I'm sure there are a lot of photographers that are, you know, are scrambling now to get their work if they, you know, if they're working in Kodachrome. It's the last days.
And when do we have to wait till the National Geographic special to see what you got?
That documentary will be out in the spring, hopefully around April, and they're working on as we speak to put everything together. And we spent about 2 or 3 weeks putting this together.
Yeah, are any peeks of it on your website itself of what you got?
No, I have not actually shown any of the pictures to anybody. So that we're going to kind of wait and show them during that documentary.
It's kind of like a Twilight Zone thing, isn't it? Where the last roll of film on Earth, you know. Like the guy who loved books, remember, and he had all the libraries to himself. He was the last man on Earth.
And then the glasses got broken.
Yeah, he steps on his glasses and he can't read.
That was a classic episode of the Twilight Zone. I remember that. Yeah,
sort of like the last roll of film here, you know. And got to make sure that Parsons got it right. Thanks, Steve. Very nice speaking with you. And people can check in on your website and just see the photography. You'll recognize a lot of the shots. He's a great photographer. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. Have a good day.
My best to you, Steve McCurry. What now?
Audience. Audience.
Into the audience.
In the audience?
Yep.
Okay.
Just jump
Don't
right in
Don't you say it now again, Michael Feldman.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't
once
take
again.
A break there.
We didn't take a break. I'd say it again. Once again,
I know,
Michael
like
Feldman.
That's so cool. Don't you wish you had Jim Packard introducing you?
Absolutely.
That'd be so cool, you know, and whatever you're doing, you know. Now, leaving the men's room. What's your name?
Carl.
Okay, Carl what?
Stevenson.
Once again, Carl Stevenson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Carl, you rule, man. Rodrigo Sebastian Torres. Huh? How are you? What do you recommend for optimal happiness? I don't recommend optimal happiness. Rodrigo? I think it's unattainable, number one. Number two, you can't get there. And number three, it's not going to happen. So I think the problem we have is looking for optimal happiness. We should look for, I'm not saying you shouldn't look for happiness, but median happiness. Huh? It should be. Yeah. You want to talk more about this? We can talk. Do you have a practice?
No, I'm teaching.
Oh, you're teaching. Okay. Well, teach him that. There is no such thing as optimal happiness, right?
Absolutely.
Introduce him again.
Stevenson, what was the first name?
Carl.
Carl, once again. Carl Stevenson.
Now, it turns out our GPS coordinates are wrong for this show. Who did this here? You didn't sign it. Did someone use GPS to get here and ended up in a dead end?
Probably.
Huh? No, they're probably not here. I don't know. Somehow their card made it through. GPS is not perfect. He said the coordinates for this online GPS coordinates lead to a dead-end street 2 blocks south. Is there an alternative universe show going on there? Well, where are you? I mean, that's probably where you are then. That alternative, what do you know? Gene Magre? 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 Okay. Why don't you interview Pat Anderson?
This is Pat right here.
I can't think of a reason. I just, this is Pat. Okay. I'm, you've been recommended.
More interesting. He is much more interesting than I.
He seems to think you're a lot more interesting than he is. He's, what is he, retired city planner or something like that?
Oh, yeah. You don't want to talk about that.
Which city are you no longer planning?
I worked for St. Louis County years ago, but then worked for private practice. Worked on the other side of the table. Argued in favor of development instead of limiting development.
You know the problem with, I'll tell you the problem with St. Louis and the county there. There's 400 different municipalities in St. Louis. You don't know which one you're in and whose rules you got to follow.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yes. We're from Webster Groves.
Yeah. Webster Groves.
Yes, that's where Franzen's from. The author you were just talking about. Jonathan Franzen.
Oh, yes.
Is from Webster Groves. Yeah.
And Webster Groves, wasn't that studied in some, like CBS did a thing or something where they studied everyone in Webster Groves and followed them around their entire lifetimes and they were.
It's not that bad, but it's.
But I mean, then they kept coming back. And were you studied by CBS?
No, we didn't live there then.
At that time.
No,
you weren't.
Yeah. No. Because then they say, let's go back to Webster Groves and see how they're doing now, going through retirement. And so, and okay, getting back to Pat Anderson. Okay, Pat. You're on. There's Pat Anderson, ladies and gentlemen.
Nothing important to say. I have nothing. I'm just a Flatlander here for the day, you know?
Okay.
Cross the Cheddar Curtain. I'm here.
Through the Cheddar Curtain with Pat Anderson. Now here's Pat. You better do it.
Through the Cheddar Curtain with Pat Anderson. Now here's Pat.
And see, and I spent 10 years crossing the Cheddar Curtain every day, twice a day. That's what
the reason for that, were you being chased through the Cheddar Curtain by?
Pretty much, chasing a paycheck. That's what.
What field are you in, Pat? Just so we don't worry.
I am retired.
Yeah. So you're not in any field, and
cornfield. No.
Nothing. And you have really nothing to say or add to that?
Absolutely nothing. I thought this was a perfect show for me.
That's Pat Anderson.
That's Pat Anderson.
Yes. Thanks, Pat. Very good. Very good. This is my husband Tom's first time at your show. By the way, I think he is still hot at his age. Can you guess how old he is? Shelby Meyer Elkhorn. Where is he? Hey, he's hot. What do you think? Is he hot? Stand up, Tom. Let's see if you're hot or not.
He's hot.
He's hot. Wow. For a 70-year-old man, you're in amazing shape, Tom. Excuse me, I got to see this dude here that everyone's talking about. Hi, Tom.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Great.
Are you really old or something and you don't look it? Or, I mean,
I don't know. I didn't think I was
old.
How old
are you?
Old.
No.
I'm 50.
50? No, well, you look good for 50.
Thank you.
But for 70, you look fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully I look good.
You say you're 70 because then we got a story here. And, okay, that's cool. All right. That's about all I had for you, Tom. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How many years have you been married now,
Tom? 29.
29 years. Wow, that's not too shabby. Okay, first time at the show in 29 years, though. And what's the reason behind that?
Her.
The reason you didn't come for 29 years is?
Yeah, well, no, I don't know. No idea. No, she brought me here.
Is this a treat for you or something?
Yes.
Or a punishment?
Yeah, well, it depends. We have to go over to the market next, so
okay. That's good. A day then, huh?
Oh, yeah, it's an exciting day.
Well, you just guys have a lot of fun there.
She wanted to know if this was a girly show.
A girly show? You want to know if this was a girly show? A girly show? A
girly show, yeah.
Where girls dance and stuff?
No, we don't need that.
See anything wrong with it. Pat Anderson. We got Pat Anderson up there doing a shimmy. You mean a girly? I mean a girls thing.
Yeah,
a girl's
thing. Yes.
Yeah. No.
I see that. Yeah.
Yeah, we track a lot of hot guys. Hot middle-aged guys is really our target audience. Thank you very much, Tom. Nice to meet you. Thank you both for coming here. We gotta go, Jim.
Yes, we do, Mike.
Huh?
We gotta go right now.
We do. Where are we going? Whoa! All right, that scared me. I lost a year there. Oh, did it scare Jacob?
No.
Oh, okay. What? Yeah, oh, it's okay. You can have Jacob could do Jim's job. Just got to sound that horn every so often. You enjoy that. We're going to play another round of the What Do You Know quiz because a lot of you didn't get a chance the first time, and you may not get a chance this time. So keep that in mind when you think this has got to be, this has got to be the, this has got to, yes, you. Yes, you. Yes, you. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? How could it not be you? There's no way it couldn't be you.
It's me.
If you're in a room, it's going to be you.
Yes.
Have you found that?
Yes. It's always true.
Always you. Your name is?
Jennifer Huck.
Jennifer, are you from around here, Jennifer?
Well, I've been living in Madison for 6 years now.
6 years?
Yeah.
Before that, you were in?
Originally from San Antonio, Texas. Got my mom visiting with me from there.
Love San Antonio. Wonderful town. Jennifer, right?
Jennifer.
One good reason you should play this quiz, Jennifer.
Because I have cousins living or listening in Brookfield waiting for me to be on the show.
Cousins in Brookfield. You couldn't call them, right? It's a local call, practically. Jennifer, if you step right up there, please, or bounce up there, or whatever you're going to do. There you go. You're Peppy. That's what my mother used to call Peppy. Oh, she's Peppy.
I'm enthusiastic.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great, great way to be. And so we got here. Your mom is here.
My mom and my friend Becky.
Hi, dear.
Becky Shuey.
Hi, Becky. How are you? And she's up from San Antonio?
Your mom? My mom is. Yeah, Dolly Huck, yeah, right there. Yeah,
yeah. Excellent. Visiting. Excellent. And okay, so what are you in these days? What are you doing?
I'm a student. Student Library and Information Science.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Librarian.
Librarian,
yes.
Girl. So, what? You're in library school? Or?
Right. I just finished my first year.
Yeah, how'd
that
go?
One more year to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been great. Excellent. Yeah. Wonderful profession.
I heard it's hard, though. Is library school supposed
to
be hard?
Yeah, it's great. It's a good place for the curious. You always get to learn something new when you're working with patrons.
But you got
to
memorize that decimal system, the Dewey decimal system and all that. And
yeah, Library of Congress.
600s or the whatever.
I'll just look it up in a book.
Yeah. 600, I think, psychology, I think. Pretty much.
Probably.
That's the one I always went to. I don't know. Looking for some psychology that explained my life. Never found it. Well, that's cool. So you got one more year?
One more year, yeah.
And then you got to look for work? Or
right. Yeah. In an academic library somewhere.
Academic
university.
Library, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. Hi. Oh, Jacob. No, he lasted a long time, though. Let's hear it for Jacob, ladies and gentlemen.
Jacob.
He is being carted out now. But he's done a great job with the show. And I think that's true. What do you do for fun in your life?
For fun?
Yeah.
I love to cook.
You love to cook?
Yeah.
Are you like gourmet type cook?
Oh, just fun stuff. I made lentils and kale the other night.
Oh. I thought you said you like to cook. Lentils and kale?
Yeah. And kuchen?
Did you?
Yeah.
I'm talking to your mom now. She made lentils and kale. Wow. What is that? Did you show her how to cook along the way? Or?
She denies anything.
Lentils and
to do with it.
Kale don't even go together, do they?
Yeah, what and kielbasa.
Kielbasa,
now
we're
talking.
Okay. Oh, so that was the garnish.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, meat as a condiment, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not meat as a condiment. I mean the kale could be kielbasa on a bed of kale with lentils.
Right.
That'd be very nice. It'd be cross-discipline or something like that. Whatever that would be. Well, that's good. That's good. Do a lot of cooking? Or
I try.
Yeah. What's your premier dish?
My premier dish?
Yeah, whatever. You have a dish that you're very proud of?
Maybe a Senegalese peanut soup.
Senegalese peanut soup sounds good.
Yeah, with some sweet potatoes, peanut butter, tomatoes.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
We'll be over.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're talking,
Is it hard to find Senegalese peanuts this time of year? Or?
No, just some peanut butter.
Oh, peanut butter. Okay, that's cool. That sounds very cool. So out there, we'll play along with you, Jennifer. Okay. And
this is an encore performance, so don't call today, but save your call for another time.
Okay, the size of ancient fecal pellets of South American chinchillas, I was in a weird mood, when proves what, again? Scientists have been studying the size of the ancient fecal pellets of South American chinchillas, and in Ecuador, I'm sure, where the hummingbirds were buzzing.
They meet down there.
And then that proves what? The size of the ancient fecal pellets of South American chinchillas proves what, again? It's kind of an important discovery to some people. And Irma's on the line from Royal Oak, Michigan.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Okay. I didn't hear the question before I called.
Oh. But now you heard it and you're sorry, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, they've been studying these ancient fecal pellets of South America, and sometimes they're larger and sometimes they're smaller. And the question then arises, what does that indicate? about, let's say, the climate of that time in South America?
It fluctuated.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
what would you think in terms of temperature, rainfall, or the amount of rain?
I'd say.
Or the rainfall, or the.
That it rained. It rained.
So you're saying the fluctuations in rainfall could be determined by the size of the ancient fecal pellets of South American chinchillas?
Oh, I'd say that surely would be true.
Yes, that's exactly right. Irma in Royal Oak, Michigan. Good insights there, and so that could be very useful if you're studying that sort of thing. Irma, what do you do there in Royal Oak?
Well, I just retired from teaching.
You did? High school or?
And so now I'm deciding what I'm going to do with my time.
Yeah. Were you a high school teacher or?
What? And a counselor.
And a counselor. Okay. Okay, good. Irma, this is Jennifer.
Hi, Irma.
Hello.
Hi. This is Jen.
Still there?
I'm here.
Okay, the two of you are partners right now, so you work on this together. This is a cooperative sort of quiz. Are you good with that, Irma?
I am. I came to your show in Ann Arbor.
You did?
Yep.
Okay, so did you get on the quiz there?
No.
No, okay. So this will make up for that, I think. Make up for that experience. Two of you work together. Here are the categories. Jim Packard.
Categories of current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention. Science or odds and ends?
Irma, you pick the first category. What would you like?
I'll take school.
School it is. Should have learned this. Who has more genes, humans or sponges? Or is it a wash?
Oh, boy. Well, what do you think, Jennifer?
Humans.
Or sponges, or is it a wash?
I'm going to go with humans. Give you the full question. What do you think, Irma?
How about a wash?
A wash. Irma is leaning towards a wash.
Okay, let's go with Irma's.
It's a wash.
It's
roughly
a wash!
The same number of genes as a sponge.
Good job, Irma.
So keep that in mind next time you're bragging about your genetic material.
One right, no wrong.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Very good. What's left there, Jimmy?
Current events, people, places, science, odds and ends.
Jennifer?
Let's go with science.
Science it is. The methane lake, Ontario Lacus, on Saturn. Is it rising? Are the levels rising or falling in the methane lake, Ontario, on Saturn? There's a Lake Ontario on Saturn. That's cool.
Oh, my gosh. Irma, what do you think, rising
methane
or falling?
Methane levels rising or falling?
How about rising?
Rising? Rising sounds good.
Or falling?
Or falling.
Or falling. Falling could be good, too.
Or rising.
Michael Feldman.
Or falling.
What do you think? Falling?
50-50, yeah.
What?
Falling? Falling.
Falling.
Less methane than there used to be?
Less.
Yes, they're falling. They're
less
falling. They're losing 1 meter a year, but it's a Saturn year, which is like 30 years long. So it's nothing to worry about just as yet.
Two right, no wrong.
Unless you have lake frontage on Saturn, then I'd be concerned.
Yes, it would be.
Yes.
Current events, people, places.
What's left there, Jim?
Current events, people, places, odds and ends.
Irma.
I'll take current events.
Current events, current right events. Out of the news? Yes. Taylor Swift. You know Taylor Swift?
Yes.
I've heard of her.
The singer, whatever she is, has been enshrined in a Hall of Fame recently. Do you know which Hall of Fame Taylor Swift was enshrined in? Not necessarily in her field.
Oh.
Hall of Fame?
Yeah, Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame.
Not the country Hall of Fame.
No.
At the Rock and Roll Hall
like
of Fame?
Like a wax museum.
No. Wax museum? No. She's not ready for the wax museum yet. I don't know. You probably either heard about this or you didn't, I guess. But
she have other hobbies? Or
could be, yeah.
Both?
I don't know. Her personal life? I don't pry.
Nice hair?
Need a dancer.
No. No idea?
No idea.
Okay. It's the Bowling Hall of Fame.
Bowling Hall of Fame.
Apparently she bowls.
Who knew?
Don't worry about it.
Right and one wrong.
Okay, don't worry.
Yikes.
What's left there, Jim?
People, places, odds and ends.
Odds and ends.
Odds and ends.
Okay.
Would Bill O'Reilly consider in vitro fertilization?
For himself?
Is it on his bucket list, in other words? Once again, I can't speak for Bill O'Reilly.
Bill O'Reilly.
Is he in favor of it, I guess?
I'm going to say against it.
Against
I'm going to say that, too.
He's against
He's
it.
He's against it.
Congratulations, however, for you, because that wins the quiz. Jim Packard, what have they won?
Well, Irma, you and Jennifer will both win the CD, the first 25 of The Hardest from Michael Feldman's What Do You Know? The CD compilation, I should say. You'll both appreciate the simpler pleasures of strange trajectories and a mysterious bounce after reading Bobby Rush's How to Line Up Your Fourth Putt from Doubleday, yeah, and relive the pleasures of the quiz playing What Do You Know? The Party Game, including the faux Sterling Jubilee Michael Feldman bobblehead. It's from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to both
Wonderful.
Of you.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer.
Thank
nice you. Good luck to you. Irma, hang on just a second. We'll get an address.
Tickets are on sale for a live What Do You Know show from the Gallagher Bluedorn Performing Arts Center in Cedar Falls, Iowa on September 8th. Get yours by calling 319-273-4TIX or follow the links at iowapublicradio.org. Michael and the gang head to the Red River Valley for a live What Do You Know show from Festival Concert Hall on the North Dakota State University campus in Fargo on October 20th. Tickets available by calling 701-231-7969 or click on prairiepublic.org/radio. Our next live shows in Madison are September 22nd and 29th at Monona Terrace. Tickets at notmuch.com or by calling 608-262-2201.
PRI, Public Radio International.